Okay, it's time.
Let's make a toast to the damned, waiting for tomorrow when we're played out by the band, drowning out of sight.
Hi, and welcome to Casual Trek, a Star Trek recap and ranking podcast brought to you by Nerd and Tie and Wet Ghosts. I'm Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer, and my Hideo Kojima name is The Hospital Hallucination.
And I'm Miles Reed Lobato, a science fiction writer, and my Hideo Kojima name is Cook Shining Man.
Normally, we talk about three episodes of Star Trek based around theme and rank them on a big list of best to worst. But we occasionally have a tangent episode about some form of tracking, whether it's some nice walk on the South Downs or Lord of the Rings, and we've been threatening to do an episode about Death Stranding for a while. So now that Death Stranding 2 is out, it's time to go to the beach. But before that, Miles, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying? And I guess non-Death Stranding thing.
Well, yesterday, Rihanna and I went to see 28 Years Later at the cinemas.
Ooh, I am very, very eager to go and see that.
It's very good. It's, as someone who is both, who has been incredibly tired of zombie apocalypses since the moment in, since about, like, the Walking Dead comic when they're in the prison for about 50 issues, and I kind of got bored of it before, he gets his hand chopped off. And as someone who's also bored or very tired of post-apocalyptic stories in general, because, you know, these are the times in which we live. And it was very nice to see a very British take on the genre.
Cool. Yeah, I loved Days and Weeks. And at a convention played through someone's interpretation of 28 Months. And I'm quite pleased that at 28 years that effectively admits that our 28 Months Later RPG was obviously canon.
Obviously.
And yeah, I think my partner's pretty similar to you as far as going a bit tired of a lot of the zombie things. Yeah. So I think I'm on my own for years, but hopefully I can enlist a friend or two to join me, because I've got a weird thing where I don't like going alone for cinema. It always feels like a communal experience, even if we're staring at a screen for a couple of hours.
I don't mind going to the cinema alone. It's generally been because I will go to the cinema for a lot of weird shit. Mm. And, you know, I love my wife and my friends too much to have them pay money to go see Alex Garland's Men at like 10 o'clock in the morning on my day off. I mean, okay, there is something part lost of the communal movie viewing experience, but my God, it was kind of worth it to be sitting there watching the climax of Men going, what the fuck is going on?
Oh, that was quite a movie.
And like, I remember texting Rihanna, like, I just finished the movie, and she was like, how was the ending? I've heard it's wild. I'm like, I don't know. In all parts.
Yeah.
Like, the film very much... Like, the film wasn't what I was expecting from the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really don't want to go into anything substantial, because... Spoilers.
Yeah.
But, like, after it seems like Danny Boyle's last few films have been kind of, like, trying to get that Notting Hill kind of, I want an Oscar and I kind of want to get another one, which meant that we had to deal with Yesterday. It was nice to kind of see that. It's nice to see elements that the kind of the weirder Danny Boyle of like Trainspotting and Sunshine hasn't entirely gone away.
Oh, good.
Visually, it was spectacular. It uses a lot. The sound design and the music is incredible. The ending is a kind of a mind fuck. But also, I get the feeling that there'll be parts of it which will affect you in the same way it affected Rihanna and I.
Oh.
In terms of some personal life stuff.
Wow.
And I think you know what I'll be talking about, what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very, heart-wrenching. But it also had a very, it was a strangely beautifully cathartic film in a genre. One of my big problems with a lot of post-apocalypse, or rather kind of like the Western / American take on the post-apocalypse, it always feels like a very conservative genre where it's where it becomes about, you know, it becomes like the men with the toughest guns and the squarest jaws going, we're going to rebuild our society and we're going to do it right this time with the red flags waving in the background.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, this is where it's interesting seeing some RPGs like Quiet Year and Apocalypse World, which managed to go around an amount of that.
And so the film starts off feeling of the term that gets used on Breakfast in the Ruins is the term cozy catastrophe.
Yeah.
Where books like John Wyndham's Day of the Triffids, where society collapses, but it's okay. We've got enough tea bags and we're going to get very pastoral. And I would say over the course of the film, it starts off John Wyndham and ends very J.G. Ballard.
Okay.
In a very kind of that kind of scale. I like the fact that it becomes less about mankind trying to reclaim reclaim England, and more that England has reclaimed England from man, and that the nature and trees have just overtaken the cities and the villages, and England is a green and pleasant land filled with rage monsters. To one thing, the ending of the film is going to fly over the head of 97% of Americans watching it, because it's referring to such a fundamentally British character and person that, yeah, if I mention the name, It's going to spoil. It leads into this. I'm interested to see where the second film in this trilogy is going to take us.
Yeah. Yeah. The only other person I know who's seen it so far was saying they were a little nonplussed with the conclusion, but very much aware that there were going to be sequels. So
yeah. I feel, for me, after the denouement, like the third act, like end the ending of the film, the actual ending of the story of the film itself, for me, that such wild shift at the end kind of felt like the whiplash you need after after that conclusion.
Okay,
cool. But I won't. But yeah. Like it was. It's well acted. The kid, the actor who's playing the 12-year-old boy Spike is fantastic. Like, he doesn't fall into any of the traps of kind of child actors. He doesn't get too, he's not too cutesy. He is a convincing actor, and he's an incredibly convincing actor for someone so young. Ralph Fiennes does sort of steal the show when he turns up at the end. And have you seen Nosferatu?
Yeah. Oh God, yeah.
Okay. So I'll be honest, Monster Peen is having a comeback this decade.
Because
after Nosferatu and that, we get an impressive showing of Monster Dick in this film. The monster fucker fetishists are having a good year, and you know what? Good for them.
Yeah, well done them.
So, Hospital, what non-Star Trek thing have you enjoyed this last week?
Well, at the moment, and oddly, relatively fitting for this episode. I've been on a nice long walk, and my feet are horrendously blistered. I don't know how Sam Porter Bridges does it, frankly, but after a while of doing, you know, little walks out to the sea and back, given how gorgeous it was yesterday with the weather, Emma and I decided to go on a six harbour walk around Fishbourne. Now, Fishbourne's where there's like old Roman ruins and such, just the other side of Chichester. And we'd been to the ruins before, and this time the six harbour walk basically goes from, in our case, Fishbourne, over to Chichester Harbour, Itchenor, a ferry over, Bosham, and then all the way back to Fishbourne again. And it was really lovely. It was very nice. We arrived as the tide was out, so that meant the estuary that we were wandering around was all down. You had boats grounded. You had, admittedly, the slight smell of the tides being low in an estuary, but by the time we came back, the tides had risen. In fact, between having lunch in Bosham and setting off with some ice cream, of course, because gorgeous day and that, the tide had risen enough that we couldn't walk back the way that we'd came. We had to go through an alleyway instead, unlike a family that were just wading across for what was previously pavement. Got to see some swans, some ducks, tons of boats. And yeah, it was a lovely time. Admittedly, having played a lot of Death Stranding 2 in the last few days, I couldn't help but imagine little red X's on bits of terrain that were really awkward to clamber over. But yeah, it's a nice reminder that even though I am someone with, you know, a bit too much weight on me and a fucked up spine, that can still go for a nice long walk and enjoy the day. And we left there thinking, well, we're shattered now, going to have to do this sort of thing more often, maybe a slightly less long walk, maybe one that we're not back in Brighton for six after having left Brighton at 8:30. So yeah, it was a nice time.
Maybe sturdy boots.
Oh yeah, I wore some nice walking boots. It's just, yeah, a lot of stumbling around on slightly moist ground where the tide had gone out, and hoping that it doesn't come in while we're wandering along it. So yeah, it was
okay.
Good.
All right.
Yeah, so today, as we said, we're talking about Death Stranding. This was released on the 8th of November 2019 on PS4 primarily, but has been released on other systems since. It was developed by Kojima Productions, the first Hideo Kojima game that he's directed in 22 years, and his first original game in 13 years. It was written by Hideo Kojima, Kenji Yano, and Shuyo Murata. And, of course, directed by Hideo Kojima, who I still remember watching a documentary disc that came with Metal Gear Solid 2, where he'd pretty much proclaimed himself the Kubrick of video games. So, there you go.
You know what? Go for it. If you want to declare yourself the Kubrick of video games, you know what? Yeah, he's definitely earned it.
I mean, that's the thing. Hideo Kojima is a man that's enough of an auteur. I feel these days you don't need to say that. You are the Hideo Kojima of video games.
Yeah.
That is good enough.
Although that said, a Kubrick-directed Bond movie, that would be kind of great.
Yeah, yeah, that would be good fun. Yeah, normally we talk about the songs coming out in the week that Star Trek episode aired, but they bored us and we've covered them before. So instead, my listen at lunch was Death Stranding by Chvrches, who are a band I love but will always mispronounce because of them spelling their name like that for easier Googleability.
I mean, I do love me some Chvrches. I think Screen Violence is my favorite album of theirs.
Oh my god, yeah, I love Screen Violence. They're a good fun band. I think it was seeing Jamie McKelvey doing bits of art for them, and I think the Overthink It podcast, their spin-off Theory for Turntables, covered them. Wasn't thrilled, but because they were doing album by album reviews of things, I'd listened to it and was like, yeah, these people.
I actually think it was Death Stranding and them doing the title song, which pushed me in their direction. Although, like, Time is an Illusion, I swear I picked up, like, I thought the game had come out earlier than it had, because I swear I picked it up Christmas 2019, because I remember buying it before the pandemic.
Yes, I felt that it had been an older thing, because I'd been very excited about it, despite not having a PlayStation console at that point. And Christmas 2019, my partner decided that we would be getting a PlayStation 4 for Christmas. And part of that would be that I'd been desperate to play Death Stranding and Sony's Marvel's The Spider-Man. And yeah, I played on Christmas Day. I unwrapped it and started playing Death Stranding, and my brother was down, as Christmas is basically me and him, and we were like, yeah, this is interesting, okay, curious, and then put it down again and played the fuck out of Spider-Man, and it was only upon completing Spider-Man that I picked Death Stranding up, and that's when it got its hooks in me finally.
Well, the thing about the Spider-Man is that that's a really playable game.
It's so much fun.
As someone who has, you know, as someone who is old enough that to have had a Nintendo Entertainment System and has played a variety of Spider-Man games of differing quality over the years, starting with the amazing Spider-Man for the Game Boy, then Spider-Man for the Mega Drive, which admittedly had one of my favorite Spider-Man mechanics, which is you can take photos of the bad guys on a level, and then you get money which replenishes your web fluid.
Nice.
And okay. the other kind of mechanic, which is if you start to run low on health, you can return to to Peter Parker's apartment and just kind of walk around while your health bar refills and then restart the level over.
Huh. I remember a Spider-Man game on the Commodore 64, and it was a platformer. It wasn't massively impressive apart from a couple of things. One was you are playing Spider-Man trapped in a video game by Mysterio.
Okay.
Works.
Is this the one where the health meter is a picture of a full length picture of Spider-Man?
And the other thing was actually the physics for the web slinging for a Commodore 64 game and a platformer were shockingly good.
Wow.
Like the momentum, and even though you could only, you know, point it according to how the joystick would go, you thwipped onto things perfectly, and it was very good for that. But
that's the thing that's not common to Spider-Man games is good web slinging mechanic.
Yeah, so I raced through that, and I was trying to be good and only be playing one PS4 game at a time. A thing which has mostly fallen apart, because I was originally like, yeah, this will complete more games. And no, I will drag my feet when trying to do things like Torment, Tides of Numenera, And of course, during my play of Death Stranding, I also had massive breaks for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. And Final Fantasy VII is Rebirth, the first one.
I think it's Remake.
They're too similar.
Yeah.
Name-wise. But yeah, the first one of those, I downloaded the demo, fell back in love with it, and yeah, bought it. But aside from that, Death Stranding was the PlayStation game that I played through a lot of 2020, actually. It turned out to be my lockdown game more than Animal Crossing, even. And yeah, it sounds like we must have got it around the same time, if it was like kind of Christmas 2019.
Yeah. Because I'm sure... Because I think 2020 was... 2019 was the last regular Christmas we had with my immediate in-laws.
Yeah.
Because Christmas 2020 was just myself and Rihanna, and God, that had been shortly after the diagnosis, and just before treatment started, because treatment literally started the 1st of January, but also. I believe I was also in quarantine because some fucking idiot came to work at Starbucks with fucking COVID, and thus the store shut down for 8 days. And since I had worked with him, I was off work for 8 days.
Of course.
So I think it was just Christmas was just us, and I don't think I'd gotten Death Stranding. Definitely must have gotten Death Stranding 2019.
Okay. Yeah, actually, think about it. It must have been 2021. Because, yeah, 2020 was my first Christmas actually with Emma, rather than her going up to her folks and my brother coming down here. So, yeah, 21, because it was my brother and I for experiencing the PS4. So, yeah, must have been that. So it would have been out for a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. I finally got round to it.
But like, yeah. time is nothing anymore.
Yes. Yeah, something which, again, Death Stranding is worryingly.
Yeah, and
worryingly like, feels.
And like Death Stranding, I only actually completed the game this year.
Yeah.
Because unlike a lot of my friends who just play a lot of video games at a lot of time, I just tend to pick it up I'll pick up a game like every so often, then play it for like a couple of days. It's like I swear, Alien Isolation, I play for one weekend a year, make about 5 minutes progress, and then get frustrated and give up.
Yes, Emma's tactic with Elden Ring as well, of like, she'll play a couple of full-size video games and then go back to Elden Ring like once or twice a year, and then we'll stop and after making a bit of progress and then pick it up again.
Like Elden Ring, I know I've said before on the podcast, I think I play play intensely for a weekend every 3 months. And then I just realize that all I'm doing is just grinding and then go, what the fuck am I doing? Like Elden Ring is a fine game, but I don't, unlike Elden Ring, I have no real emotional connection to, because it's just like, all this shit happened before the game started, have at, you're going to die. And so it's just like, you know, I don't know, like, the utter, like, playability of being able to go wherever you want in any direction with no set linear path strangely means I have no emotional connection to the game, because I'm not playing it to the sufficient levels that the game seems to demand of it, which is basically treat it like a second job.
Yeah. Yeah, I we should probably explain.
Actually, start talking about the game.
Yeah, yeah. Explain what Death Stranding actually is. And this is a difficult question. I will say, spoilers for Death Stranding 1. Now, if you've not experienced it, it's not the end of the world to listen on. And actually, if you didn't like it or didn't understand it or might be tempted by it, by having some nerds discuss it, then feel free to listen. And it's a weird game. And there are a number of things that can potentially be spoiled. So I figured putting that out there, because you and I have both completed it and are currently a few episodes into Death Stranding 2, which, on the other hand, we will try not to spoil at all.
Yeah.
And it's relatively new, and we both keep dancing around where we're at in the game as well, just for fear of spoiling one another.
Yeah, like, this is, it's rare because I very rarely buy a game on first day release.
Yes.
I think
it's a Nintendo game for me.
Fair enough. Like, I think the last game I bought on first day release was Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Ah.
Which might honestly be the best Star Wars game I've ever played. Mostly because I hate how Star Wars video games gamify the light side, dark side mechanics. And in both games, there is no real light side, dark side, like, mechanic skill tree. So, spoiler alerts for Jedi Survivor. When your character draws on the power of the dark side, it is fully, entirely story-based. And thus, and works on the arc of the story for the character, which as someone who hates how both Star Wars as a franchise and Star Wars fans essentially treat Jedi and Force powers as essentially Dragon Ball Z style power levels guaranteed by heritages of magic blood, it's nice to have a Star Wars story where it's just like, yeah. Your character touches the dark side because he's fucking pissed off at what he's just discovered.
Fair enough. Yeah, so
Death Stranding.
Death Stranding. So, behind the scenes of all this, Hideo Kojima did a lot of Metal Gear Solid games, and they were good fun. And he was going to do Silent Hills, the aliens to Silent Hills, Alien, I assume. He's enough of a personality that whenever he was tweeting about meeting famous people or anything like that, you'd start to get a feeling that they're likely to pop up in a game of his, as he started hanging around Norman Reedus and Guillermo del Toro, and suddenly it's like, oh, look, it's Silent Hills. It's starring Norman Reedus, and that was announced in the now delisted game by Konami called PT, a playable teaser, which, sadly I never got to experience, but looked like a lot of fun. And then Kojima left after Metal Gear Solid 5. He left Konami, and in fact, there's a mission in Ground Zeroes, I think, where you literally rescue Hideo Kojima, and it did feel a bit like, was this put in as his kind of I am leaving here
a cry for help?
So then it was announced that Kojima Productions were going to be putting out a game that Sony was putting money into, and it was going to star Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen and Lea Seydoux and a bunch of his friends. And, little else was known. And frankly, the trailers just raised more questions than they answered. A habit which has continued through to Death Stranding 2. As someone that has played through all of Death Stranding 1 front to back, watching the trailers for two was entertainingly perplexing. So yeah, so what is a Death Stranding?
Oh god, you left me the easy part. A Death Stranding was an event, some kind of apocalyptic extinction level event, which merged the worlds of the living and the dead, where the souls of the dead are trapped in the world of the living and have not progressed on to the world of the dead.
Yeah.
And so there are these kind of tar ghosts called BTs, beached things, which essentially stuck where they died, or stuck in areas close to where they died, and they can't leave, but they can sense people. And if you get if a human gets consumed by a BT, it causes a giant explosion called a void out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if anyone dies, so when you're playing the game, you are urged not to kill anyone if you get in a fight, because again, it will cause a void out as they explode and turn into a wet ghost. And this has caused everything to collapse. Like, society has crumbled. What few people are left are living in bunkers, and they're isolated from one another, because if you get close to people, what happens if they die and there's a void out, which is like, you know, a kind of mini nuke almost.
Yeah.
And this has left the land outside to regrow weird. Specifically in this case, because all of this, you know, the wet ghosts, all of that, you get a phenomenon called timefall going on, where it all rains and gets stormy, and the rain ages things and people. So the ground will grow back and plant life will grow, and you get these weird crystals developing that look a bit like kind of hands coming up from the ground, called Kyrillium, which is a resource in it, but also nicely creepy. And quite early on, we see our hero, Sam Porter Bridges, of the Bridges Company, who is a porter. Good work, Kojima. Love it.
Yep.
Yeah, and his Uniting America, which just means that you can add some relevance to that Sam in there as well.
So, there's a particular quote from a TV show we like to quote on this show. The show is Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, and the quote is, "I know other writers who use subtext, and they're all cowards." Kojima might be the most earnestly Garth Marenghi type of writer, because his id appears to be on the front page of everything he's written of every game. I think he puts Tarantino to shame, the levels of interconnected referentialism that he puts into any of his games.
Definitely. I was thinking, when you mentioned Garth Marenghi, there are some people that have made video games where you go, oh yeah, like, this is just text, but because there is nothing underneath. While Kojima is like, yeah, here's all this subtext in the loudest way possible. And yeah, of course it all has meaning, but in odd ways.
In odd ways, know? Which I can't help but just go, well done, sir.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, it's like with the Metal Gear Solid series, where so much is about the automation of militaries, of, you know, like, hired soldiers, of child soldiers, all of this, but also there's a recurring NPC whose big thing is that he poops his pants. So yeah, that's Kojima.
or a character in the first game who you have to identify by the way their butt looks when they walk. Which, yep. to be fair to Kojima, he has equal opportunity on the male gaze in his games. Like, I swear, yeah, if you want to see Norman Reedus take a shower, you can make Norman Reedus shower himself down as much as you like.
So yes.
I have to give him credit for that.
It is mechanically relevant as well.
Yeah, it is mechanically relevant to the game to make Norman Reedus chug a bunch of monster and go use the toilet.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so in all of this, humanity's trapped, isolated, stuck in all these bunkers, and you have companies like Fragile, which is a company name and a person name as well. As Lea Seydoux's character, Fragile, likes to remind us that she's fragile, but she's not fragile, who basically porter items from bunker to bunker, even though it's an inhospitable terrain and filled with wet ghosts and timefall happening. So she needs someone special, like Sam Porter Bridges, to plug a baby into, a special baby that will detect ghosts, and then it'll cry when ghosts are near.
Then you can fight ghosts by throwing grenades filled with your blood and pee at them.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. Great. Good work.
No notes.
So yeah, it's kind of a post-apocalyptic Amazon delivery man simulator, but with sad ghosts and post-rock band Low Roar occasionally chiming in as well when you're in a bit of a quiet moment. And this is a kind of game where the main mechanics are you wandering around a wasteland, which it's all a bit hilly, a bit foresty. It looks kind of, I don't know,
like Scotland. It looks like,
yeah, that kind of, I don't know, when we were around Snowdonia, it looked a bit like some of that.
It's the Scottish part of North America.
Exactly. This is North America, but on a shrunk down scale. Because even though it's a long journey and it'll take many hours, it is not as long as big as America actually is. So, you know, it's a metaphorical America. And you wander around all this, like, jagged, rocky terrain and kind of wet grass and slippery mountains and stuff. And my partner bounced off it immediately in the kind of, well, you can't even stay upright. Like, anywhere you go, your shoes are going to wear down because of the shit terrain and you can't stay up. And while, yes, that is kind of valid, it's something where it's a bit of an inaccessible start, but any amount of perseverance helps as you start to learn how to balance Norman Reedus. And you start getting better shoes and better ways of carrying things, including a few chapters in vehicles, which revolutionized it for me for a lot of it, because quite often in the first area of the game, where you're going from bunker to bunker, avoiding ghosts and on some very hilly areas, it's like, oh no, I don't want to deliver there, it's really awkward and out of the way. And sometimes it's going to be someone like Jeff Keighley that's there, which was a weird cameo. But yeah, by the time you get into the main map of the game, it's a lot larger, and you get these machines, these kind of postbox machines, that will 3D print roads for you if you fill them with enough resources. And it's that continual growth of going, at first I'm walking shakily, like I'm unsure of my own legs, and then I walk confidently, and then I'm on like a bike, and then I'm on a van, and I can carry loads of things, whether it's, you know, essential resources, metals for a base, or just some fresh pants for someone.
or delivering a pizza.
Or delivering, oh my God.
Or making sure, because the thing is, you have to make sure that the pizza is properly stored on your backpack, on your bike, because if it's incorrectly stored, pizza ruined.
Yeah, and there's an amount of Tetrising that needs to go on generally with these kind of things. You need to make sure the materials are safe, because if you slip and fall, then that's going to damage them. You should put the heavier ones lower down. And while you can auto sort them, sometimes for things like a pizza where you need to keep them flat, that's going to be a problem. Or like really breakable packages, trying to keep them surrounded by other things so that they're less likely to get hit if you fall over or get attacked by the wet ghosts.
Or attacked by mules, which are bandits who are religiously obsessed with delivering stuff. I kind of forgot what the mules' deal is. They're just crazy.
Yeah, they're kind of they're kind of weirdly acquisitive, because they won't go after you if you have nothing. But they will raid you. They will attack you if you if you're delivering stuff. So yeah, I forget what the acronym even is for mules, because it's MULES.
It's gonna be something dumb.
Almost certainly, yes. Yeah. Let's see. I'm just trying to look online to see if there's anything. Their only alternative name is Homo Gestalt, which, yeah, hostile cargo thieves driven by the rational obsession with delivery work. And, yeah, they ambush porters on delivery routes trying to steal cargo. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's basically it.
And you respond by punching them out.
Yeah, again, you are, while you have weapons in Death Stranding 1 that can do lethal damage, you are really reminded, do not actually lethally kill these people. So try and bind them up using a strand, because of course, Death Stranding, strands, And yeah, you can also use non-lethal rounds and just try and get past any camps. I spent a lot of time sneaky around them, and after a little while, once you start getting good equipment, actually being able to knock them down using bolo guns that tie them up and knock them over, or just getting in a fist fight, sometimes you end up going, right, this person said their delivery was hijacked, so I've got to run into their camp, punch a bunch of them, knock them out, get in one of their vehicles, and flee.
Oh, you see, what I would do is I'd do that, but then apart from the fleeing part, I would then just kind of load up the van with just some random shit they have lying around, like material, and just raid them.
Yeah, give them a taste of their own medicine. Yeah, quite often I'd end up coming back again and again because they remain unconscious for a shockingly long time, like an unhealthily long time. There is something bad that's happening to them for all of it, especially if you leave them out in the rain. It's like, guys, I mean, hopefully you're going to survive this.
I mean, maybe Kojima might be the one person in video games who is like, you know, if you get knocked unconscious, it's actually really bad. You're not just going to walk it off like you do in any other, in like other games or storytelling.
Yeah, should have Kojima, have Sam Porter Bridges roll them over to their side or something. You know, get them in recovery position.
Don't. Now that we've said it, he's going to do it in Death Stranding 3.
Oh, no. Okay. And as you play along, it's like, oh, I've got ladders to help climb up rocky bits and climbing ropes to climb down them. And they stick around, which is nice, although they do deteriorate as the time fall and the weather will make them rot and vanish.
There's one of the mechanics I love about the game.
Go on.
is that when you connect more parts of the map to the chiral network, you can actually access ladders and ropes and things that have been left by other people playing the game.
Yes.
So the game also incentivizes you when you put up the ladder to keep the ladder or the rope in place because someone else might end up using it on their playthrough.
And it's so nice. You get that sense of sometimes where you go, oh shit, up ahead, it looks like there's a ravine. If only there was a bridge or something like that. And some beautiful person has put a bridge over there for you, even if you didn't have resources for it or the PCC kind of thing or devices to help make structures, where you just hit a point and someone has left a watchtower for you to view out of and scout an area, or a charger for your batteries. And you feel such a relief, even though this isn't a multiplayer game. You will never meet another player in the game, but you will see the impact that they have on the land. And you can give them a thumbs up, which is the currency. The currency is likes in this. And that will channel through into their game. They'll get likes for having donated equipment or for structures they've built. And again, that's just, it's a way of creating a lovely sense of community, even though you're not communicating.
Yeah.
And of course, that's the game. You are creating a sense of community between all of these different bunkers, all of these different facilities and people, even though they will only ever speak to you in hologram form when you're delivering, again, some fresh pants or a hot pizza to them. And it's lovely, that sense of it, because that relief you're getting from donations from other people, the NPCs are getting as well.
And the truth about the game is, I get a lot of the negative reviews on the game because fundamentally it is a walking simulator. There are some awkward things, but I feel it's one of those things of this is a sometimes you have to play the game on its play a game or watch a film or read a book on what it brings to you, not just what you want it to be.
Yeah, and like, this is a game that starts with you playing Sam Porter Bridges, dragging a dead body of a comrade up into a giant furnace to burn the body before it explodes into a wet ghost. And it is a sad and forlorn start. And it's all, the initial setting for it is lush, but it's also grey and it's raining. Yeah. And it feels like... It feels like grief.
The game is just really good at creating a mood.
Yes. And playing this during lockdown, that was very much the mood. Like, I was fortunate enough to be living with my partner and a lodger. And I think it was 21 or so that my partner was told by her university that support services like librarians were essential personnel all of a sudden, even though they could do all of their work virtually, were required to go in. And my lodger was having to deconstruct his shop as it was being sold and basically closing down and all that. And yeah, you had all these, or at least I had all these isolated moments where occasionally I'd get a visit from a neighbor cat. And the work I was doing we had a very small team, so we'd have one meeting a day and, you know, a bit of a catch up. And that was about the only human contact that I had. And after work, playing on Death Stranding and being Sam Porter Bridges, driving a van with his weird little ghost sensing baby, and that sense of company and isolation, you know, that, as you said earlier, about 28 years later, the kind of cozy catastrophe almost, of, like, if not for the wet ghosts, there's something kind of charming about this.
Like, I know this is back when I worked at Starbucks. So I was, with the exception of, we were closed for eight weeks for the initial lockdown period. But since I was an essential worker, I had to go back to work pretty soon. And, you know, first off, we were drive-through only, then very restricted customer service, and then back to how it was. But the customers had, like, become 20% more assholes. And then in 2021, my wife at the time worked at Best Buy, so she was an essential worker. But she worked in the warehouse, so she was basically having to get stuff for remote pickup. So there's a kind of a joke I referred to, which is because I used to work evenings and my wife would work mornings, and I'd be like, man, I don't see my wife enough. And the monkey's paw curls down and there's a worldwide pandemic. But, you know, so we see each other a lot more, but not enough. It's like, man, I wish I could see my wife a lot more. And the second finger on the monkey's paw curls and my wife has cancer. So she loses her job and basically spends an entire year at home, being with only ever going out to her various appointments, her various treatments, occasionally spending a weekend or a week with her parents in another town. So I could just get some time to just not be having to work both full time and care for someone. And yeah, like, there are times, like, as I've said many a times on the podcast and on my huge brawling blog post about Death Stranding, this was the game I played when the real world just got too shit. Because it's a really easy game to just kind of slip on some headphones, put on an audiobook or a podcast, and just kind of zone out sufficiently so that you can just get sucked in to the world. Just distract myself from the world of being an essential worker by playing a game where I basically have to play an essential worker.
Yeah, there's definitely an amount of that. I remember feeling like it was weirdly relaxing going into it, and each of the facilities that you go to, or the kind of isolated camps for preppers, they have a star rating for you as a porter. And in between all of the bits of big story and bosses, and, you know, we've not even mentioned Mads Mikkelsen or any of that kind of side of it yet. But yeah, all of these kind of things would go on. But I would save those and spend a lot of time trying to build up those star ratings, as each time a star would go up, you would get something. It might be some upgraded equipment. It might be a new color that you could recolor the bikes or vans or anything in order to just look a bit nicer. And it was interesting going through and trying to develop those relationships with places and going, right, this is going to be a rough delivery, but I'm going to do it. And back when I was first paving the roads as well, you'd get these moments of I'm having to run into a mule camp just to get the metals that I need in order to help this paving unit print out a new like a new road somewhere, which again, if you start doing that, other people's paving units will get some resources as well as an interesting little kind of kickback. So that was a nice touch, and definitely made for a relaxing time in between all of the wet ghosts, the void outs, the time fall, and all of the drama going on with the many characters. With
the many, many characters.
Oh, and the names as well. The names are amazing. So you get a kind of main cast of Fragile, who is kind of your employer and the big delivery person there, arranging all of it. And she's got reasons why she's fragile, which come to light during the game, which are, of course, fraught and tragic. But yeah, she's someone that is like wears a costume covering herself entirely because she is someone that has been affected by Timefall, by all of this kind of stuff, and has a Mary Poppins style umbrella that allows her to teleport through one of the other big conceits in this, which is the beach, a place that exists as a bridge between the living and the dead, a place where in theory everyone has their own beach, but if a lot of people die together, then it's going to be a collective beach. And it's not always even going to be a literal beach, but for Sam Porter Bridges, it is a beach. And of course you get a lot of the symbology of, you know, whales washed up on the beach, fish washed up, the Cetacean stranding is one of the concepts that inspired a lot of this. So yeah, you've got Fragile, you've got Dead Man, who is physically portrayed by Guillermo del Toro, who apparently had no idea what he was doing or what the game was about, just putting himself in Kojima's hands, but voiced by Jesse Corti. You've got Die Hardman, who is the best fucking name. I love that. Like this guy in a black mask, who is Die Hardman, Vice President for United Cities of America, because there aren't states left. It is just cities.
And then at the end of the game, you get a very lengthy emotional performance from the actor who's playing Die Hardman, explaining why he's called Die Hardman.
Yes.
And it works.
Yeah.
It works somehow.
And the guy that voiced him, Tommy Earl Jenkins, apparently did that in one take as well, which, well done.
Well done. Like,
yeah, yeah, he's kind of the voice of the government with it, where Dead Man is the voice of science, especially at the cost of, like, humanizing your little, kind of, your baby, BB28.
Your BB.
Yes, who gains the nickname Lou as the game goes on, because of course Sam Porter Bridges has to humanize this baby, which is a kind of a baby that's trapped between life and death and preserved in fluid where it can then sense ghosts and cry. You got Nicholas Winding Refn as Hartman, or at least, again, physically being Hartman, and Darren Jacobs voicing. And Hartman, again, weird guy. Like, Hartman is called Hartman because he has a machine attached to him that shuts off his heart intermittently so that he will go to the beach to try and find his family. But, of course, he has to restart his heart. So his life is just kind of half an hour of being alive and dead at a time.
And then, like, when you get to the lengthy cutscene where you get to his facility and meet him in person, as he's giving you huge amounts of monologue, he will stop, die for 2 minutes, and you're left just kind of walking around, waiting for him to come back to life and basically go, right, where was I? Okay.
Yeah, just occupy yourself for a few minutes, please.
Look at my collection of, like, dead animals.
Because, of course, he's got a bunch of them primarily based around extinction, because, hey, that's a big thing here. You've got Margaret Qualley as Mama, who sorts you out with a lot of your kit and has a kind of ghost baby floating around, which was very weird. And, you know, kind of, she seemed fairly nonchalant about it. But, yeah.
And then you have Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes.
Who is...
Clifford.
Clifford Unger. And it's just hard to watch after watching Hannibal. It is kind of hard to see him in any kind of other role, because I'm just like, you want to eat me, don't you?
Yeah, it's so difficult. And he interacts with the cast the least, pretty much. Like, most of the time, you will either see him in a boss fight in a weird beach war zone where he and other ghosts will be fighting you, which includes the trenches of World War One, early on.
It goes through several wars. It's like World War One, Europe in World War Two, and I think then it's you're in Vietnam.
Vietnam, yeah. But where you mostly see him is whenever you're going from your private room, where you sleep and look after BB and drink Monster Energy, TM, then you get the lift up and out. And when Sam Porter Bridges plugs himself into BB, he gets flashes of Mads Mikkelsen talking to a baby that you're the viewpoint of. And it seems like it is memories of BB for a lot of the game. But gets weirder than that.
Which is the tagline for this game in a nutshell? Death Stranding, it gets weirder than that.
Yeah.
Like, it was weird. Inspired by watching me play Death Stranding 2, yesterday Rihanna started playing Death Stranding 1. Ooh. And so I got to watch these opening cutscenes and the game opening for, like, the first time in about, I'll be honest, 6 years.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of nice. It was kind of nice to just kind of go back and just kind of watch the opening of the game again. At the same time, it was kind of frustrating because I was trying really hard not to backseat Bridge. And I was trying really hard to go, no, not that way. You're going the wrong way. Use the map.
Yeah, God, this is one of the few video games where I actually create waypoints on a map.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's so useful. You've got, like, a weird little machine that pops up. Is it Odorek?
Yeah, something like that.
But it's got a fan-type thing that moves around, but it also can look like a thumbs up when you're not in a haunted area or anything. But that blinks in the direction of any of the ghosts, and in theory allows you to scan the area primarily to see, is this area going to fuck up my boots? is it all unstable ground? Can I wade across this water without being pulled away? And what's out there? Because with the scanner from it all, you can highlight off in the distance, oh, there's a package that someone's left behind. Here's a package that is just resources, or, you know, like, there's some structure. So sometimes I'd take a circuitous route because someone had already laid down a bridge or a ladder, and that would be a lot easier than me using up my precious few resources. So yeah, I can see how it could be a difficult game not to quarterback with.
Yeah, I know what my wife is like, because, again, I may have said this before on the podcast, whenever she plays Fallout 4, she usually really gets into rebuilding the various settlements around the map.
Mm.
And every time I've come home to find her rebuilding another settlement, I usually kind of lean in and go, aren't you meant to be looking for your son? You know, the son who was dragged from your husband's dying hands as he was shot in the head while you were in cryo freeze. You know, how is your son going? How's the son doing?
I mean, that thing with Fallout 4, it's similar to games like Breath of the Wild, where it's like, oh my God, Link's awake. And Zelda is in desperate need. She's been fighting Ganon for 100 years in the palace, suspended up, all of this. You've got to sort it out. And I'm just helping someone with some messages in a bottle and chasing around some cuckoos and such. And it's like, well, we all know the lie with this, that yes, there is some pressure, but there are all these quests.
But let's enjoy the ride.
Yeah, well, yeah, like the other day of going, oh God, right, I've got to run back down here and it sounds like there's going to be a boss fight against a thing in Death Stranding 2. But if I just find a few lost items belonging to this guy, maybe he'll give me a better shotgun. That kind of thing. Which, yeah, luckily he did. And yep, luckily the boss patiently waited for me to arrive, which was good. Yeah, and it's been really interesting going back to it. Because when I played Death Stranding 1, that was pretty solid. Again, aside from Final Fantasy Rebirth or Remake, whichever was the first, and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, which is more a dipping in and out game, I pretty solidly played through Death Stranding and quickly became the only person I knew who had finished Death Stranding for the longest time. I wanted to talk to someone about it, and I know you were going in and out of it, and when it came out on PC, my brother finally started playing, as he only has a PC games console, games machine-wise, and even he dropped it after a while. When I sent him a picture of a screen capture from Death Stranding 2, he would say, yeah, I'm powering through number one now because I want to get there.
Yeah, so, like, I think the biggest incentive for me to finally finish Death Stranding 1 was to basically so I could get Death Stranding 2 on release. So it's not been the longest time for me since having finished one game and playing the other. But yeah, I am enjoying Death... What I'm saying right now is I am enjoying Death Stranding 2. Again, it grabs you by the emotions at times and doesn't let go, and then other times it's utterly bonkers. Like Dollman, your little puppet mate, who you attach to yourself and, you know, provides witty commentary while kind of jerking around it, looking like he's stop motion.
Yeah, yeah. At one point, Emma came in and was like, how are things going? It's like, well, I've got a doll who has the ghost of a man possessing it, who's trying to help my character process grief. Kind of. It's like, yeah, good. Okay, fine, carry on.
Turn around and leave.
Yeah, yeah, basically. And yeah, like, I'm not sure if Death Stranding 2 will have the weird cameos that Death Stranding 1 did, because the people that live in the bunkers, like Conan O'Brien is one of them.
Junji Ito is another.
Yes, does your wife know that Junji Ito will at least in face appear?
Oh, I don't think I've mentioned it. Okay, so I know that in terms of straight of cameos, the pilot of the ship is George Mad Max Miller.
Yes.
And apparently Mamoru Oshii, the director of Ghost in the Shell, the two Pat Labor movies, big anime director, one of Celeste's favorite pretentious auteurs.
Oh, good.
So yeah, he turns up as a pizza maker.
Oh, nice.
And apart from that, I'm trying to keep myself relatively spoiler free because I do honestly want to experience the game for itself.
Oh yeah, definitely. I do like that with these games. I remember when I saw Junji Ito in the first one, where it was a complete surprise that he was there. I was like, oh my God. And of course, again, it was voiced by someone else, but it's
mocap. It's mocap Junji Ito. It's just like, okay, who are we gonna get? Who are we gonna get?
Yeah. Oh. So yeah, I'm curious to see who's going to be in number two, and number one, like it took me longer than I thought, but a lot of that was my own distracting of myself in driving around. And again, just trying to five-star most places. And then cursing when I realized the platinum trophy would only be accessible if I did it on hard. And I was like, I don't know if I'm coming back and replaying this ever. I have bought the director's cut upgrade for number one to try at some point, but it was a very good story, and I put it away, and while I wasn't necessarily going to come back to it, it stuck with me. And I know that it's a point of contention with a lot of people. It gets a lot of derision in this house as the walking game where you just keep falling over and there are ghosts and such. And most people I know will either go, fuck yeah, Death Stranding. Oh my God. Or they'll go, what? No, that's the game where Kojima lost it more than usual. And so I can't say no to that.
But at the same time,
it's like, great.
Yeah, the game elicited an emotional reaction from me. That's there is no objective measure for what is good art. No matter how much we try and delude ourselves into saying otherwise, so people can make money on YouTube grifting. But
yeah,
even like the worst film, if one person liked it, it's like, okay, fantastic. Then it wasn't wasted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we like a lot of good and bad things. Like, there is a lot of trash out there that is still very enjoyable, and a lot of pretentious things where you go, well, it still said something. It still, you know, it made me feel feelings.
Yeah.
And the ultimate message of the game being about community and bringing people together, even in the face of incredible isolation, incredible loss. And at the end of it, you still have, you know, like, I'm not the biggest Norman Reedus fan. He generally seems like, I don't know, I guess the thinking man's Jeremy Renner at times.
The trouble is, okay, yeah, I haven't seen Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen Blade 2. All I really know of Norman Reedus is from these games. The trouble is, sometimes I look at him and I can't help but see Howard Moon from The Mighty Boosh.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm going to have to think about that.
I just kind of get distracted because I really want him to break into start scrimping, or pretend to play jazz or go into any of the Mighty Boosh routines.
So in Walking Dead, he and he and his brother, character wise, were both real pieces of shit. His brother Merle more than him. And as such, Merle was got rid of and came back and got rid of again. And the actor, like Norman Reedus, has a very good presence to him, but he does seem like he would be just, I am rugged, slightly survivalist guy who hopefully we're not going to look into his background and see anything questionable. But also, you could imagine that being kind of guy. And, of course, Kojima writes him as a bit of a goof. Like, despite being, I'm slightly rugged and I've got these emotions and it's all quite sad, really. He's still, he will act a bit goofily.
When I was watching Rihanna play the opening cutscenes, I've got very much Han Solo vibes. Where he is this guy who's very kind of, tough and, rugged, and I don't stick my neck out for nobody. But you spend 30 minutes with him, you're like, no, you're gonna stick your neck out for everybody. We know that about you. You will say that you don't care about the revolution, but you're gonna stick with the revolution. You're just gonna be standing off to the corner going, this is bullcrap, I can just take off any time I like.
I mean, you're not a million miles away from at least the modern interpretation of Cloud Strife, where I remember playing some of the original Final Fantasy VII and thinking, get involved, mate. Just fucking get in, all of the dot, dot, dot kind of dialogue. No, I don't do anything. It's like, guy, this is, doesn't make you a mysterious protagonist. This makes you an arse at this point.
It's like, there are very few actors, like, Harrison Ford, like, there are very few actors who can do that.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, Bogart was one, Harrison Ford was another. It's why the Chris Pratt character in the Jurassic World movies completely falls apart, because... he's very much trying to play this Harrison Ford kind of guy, where it's like the sleazy jerk bag is a front for like who he really is. Whereas, you know, and Harrison Ford can do that, where, you know, he can play the "I don't stick my neck out for no one," but you can kind of see that he knows he's putting on a facade. Whereas the Chris Pratt character in Jurassic World plays it so genuinely that he's a sexual harassment seminar waiting to happen.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And in a way, that, like, this is how you do your loner hero of, yes, he is the loner hero that will end up invested in people. It's Wolverine at his best.
Yes.
You know, Wolverine at his worst is just... yeah, I'm the main character and Mr. No Rules, and I'll go off on my own and make every story about me, no matter what, bub. And, yeah, at his best, he is this figure who has taken on all of these damaged kids over his time, whether he likes it or not, being like, no, I stick alone. Yes, I am going to adopt this traumatized girl, inevitably. Like, bring her on side and get her on the team. It's like, yeah, yeah.
I don't stick my neck out for nobody, but I'm gonna take the strapping 7-foot-tall Russian to a bar, get him drunk, and then beat him up because he dumped his girlfriend.
Yeah, I mean, and
but then Juggernaut did it for him anyway, so
saved him a job.
Yeah.
And again, it's still that thing of afterwards, bygones, you know? Like, Petey's still a close friend. It's just he did need a bit of a beating.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel Norman Reedus gets through a lot of concerns about your general anti-hero guy, kind of loner hero with this. And... watching him interact with folks, like with his sister mother, who is also the president and possibly some kind of extinction entity kind of thing, almost, of Lindsay Wagner, the bionic woman, who, yeah, is Bridget Strand, but also Amelie Strand, who, yeah, because presidenthood is inherited in the United States of America, like, Amelie takes over when Bridget Strand dies, and also kind of is Bridget Strand, and gets kidnapped. And while you are connecting everywhere, you've got to find her. But luckily, by connecting everywhere, so you just carry on, and that's good.
And leads to a fantastic Mario, unexpected Mario joke.
I did not Well, yeah, that was a weird moment.
Like, I'd had that spoiled for me, but enough time had passed, I was like, no, that just has to be something someone made us a joke. And there's like, no, and then it's like, you're Mario, and I'm Mario, and you're Princess Beach. And then cut to them running across the beach, and I'm like, this is the greatest game of all time.
Yeah, yeah. Kojima, how are you so deep and yet so stupid? all at once. I love it.
It's like, yeah. It's like it's how I feel we are, in which we're both incredibly pretentious and then both incredibly stupid.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely feels like the right way to be both of these things.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So it was a fun, weird experience. Like, it's one of those games where, while I always have trepidation with a boss battle, I don't know why, I always feel more pressure with them, and like, oh no, it's going to be a chore or a faff. And I admit part of this is because of my role as an unintentional Halo video game fan, where they seem to mistake difficulty for add even more health and make it more of a slog. And so far, in number one and number two, what I've experienced of it, it's not that bad. And there are a lot of weird things, especially when it comes to big villain Troy Baker's Higgs Monahan, who, of course, is called fucking Higgs. And he's a bit jokery, a bit kind of, I'm here to cause the extinction. And, like, you get into a beat-em-up, like, into a literal fighting game.
It's a quick time event.
Yeah.
It's basically a quick time event where you have a slap this guy repeatedly.
A quick time event that looks like a Street Fighter.
Yeah, like...
Why not?
I find that most of the boss battles in Death Stranding 1, I found a bit tedious. Because it's usually giant, shoot giant thing. And usually the game will provide you enough, like, grenades and blood bags and guns, so that didn't feel huge amounts of a challenge. The battles when you're fighting the soldiers in the various war zones were a lot more difficult.
Yes. Again, they were fun but tricksy. I didn't find myself dying too much to them. The boss battles, at least, you'd climb bits of, like, wet ruins and vehicles, and you'd see donated weapons from other players and things kind of delivered by ghost versions of Sam from their universe. And in fact, it feels a bit like that's been dialed up in the general play of Death Stranding 2, where you see requests from other people going like, this player wants weapons. I'm like, well, I'm just about to go to a bunker, so yep. I'll just offload some of my weapons and go, here, I can make another ladder. You know?
But no, so far I'm enjoying it.
Good.
I can't wait to see what madness awaits us.
Yes, we will probably return to report back on the madness when we are either closer to done or actually done. It does feel momentum-wise at the moment, even though I want to go back and finish Baldur's Gate 3, I want to go back and finish the Miles Morales Spider-Man, and I really ought to finish Cyberpunk because I'm right near the end of it. This is the game I will be playing for the foreseeable.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I know I've added you as a strand contact on Death Stranding 2, which I'm not entirely sure how this works. But yeah, yourself and a friend of mine, Matt, who also has Death Stranding. Of course, for those listening, if you friend, hey, it's Sky Shark on PlayStation, then we can be strand contacts as well. Okay. And hopefully that will help somehow.
How do you become a strand contact?
Like,
it's an APAS enhancement. That explains that. Yes. I've not been doing the APAS so much.
Ah, yes.
Okay, well, that's incentivized me to be paying attention to the APAS part of the game.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes.
So how long were we planning to talk about Death Stranding? An hour?
Yeah, tight hour, which, given we started talking about it 25 minutes ago, is technically right. It's the best kind of right. We should probably close off. I can go downstairs to a fan and Death Stranding 2.
And I can go downstairs to a tumble dryer, because I've got towels which have been in the washing machine for quite some time.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, on that note, where can folks find you, Mars?
They can find me by my tumble dryer in my apartment building. But apart from that, find me on Blue Sky at... Go to the show notes. At milesreedlabato.bscott.social, or my blog at mareedlabato.wordpress.com. And the hospital hallucination, where can they find you?
Well, haunting hospitals, of course, unless you unplug your controller, put it in a different port, in which case you'll just see me, an overweight, doughy nerd, instead of all of the hallucinations that you've been seeing.
I understood that reference.
Yeah. You can find me on skyshark.itch.io as both the site where I have RPGs and my Blue Sky account name now. I am on fakedtales.com, where I will hopefully be talking about comics. If I'm feeling good, 2000 AD. If I'm feeling awful, the new 52. And on Who Dares Rolls, where I'm writing about board games, mainly.
You have problems.
I did have a friend reach out and say, you don't need to do this to yourself. It's yes. Like, just I was reading Geoff Johns's Aquaman, and that's when I stopped and finished reading 1983's 2000 AD issues. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see if I continue with the new 52, or if I actually take care of myself.
And with that, normally we would tell her to go to a Starfleet, but instead go make a strand, go make a connection, and live long and eat a cryptobiote. They will store your blood levels.
Yeah, and be careful. If your weird ghost baby starts crying, that means there are wet ghosts around.
Keep on keeping on.
Keep on keeping on.
You have been listening to a Casual Trek Diversion episode by Miles Reed-Lobato and Charlie Etheridge-Nunn. This was done for the Nerd and Tie group. Death Stranding is owned by Kojima Productions. Death Stranding, the song, is by Traverses. And keep on keeping on.